that I'm quite a complicated person. By complicated, it means that it's sometimes hard for people to read me and to know what I'm thinking or what I like and don't like. And let me break it down for you. When it comes to Dharma, I am 100% committed and totally serious. When it comes to anything else, I can be a clown just like anybody else. When it comes to anything else, I can have fun and do all kinds of things that you didn't think that monks can do, just like anybody else. And the reason is, actually, I'm not an outgoing person or kind of a fun person or do this or do that type of person. I'm not that type of person. But you see, to make Dharma reachable and to make Dharma more accessible, the Dharma itself is tangible and non-tangible. The Dharma itself has life, but it requires sentient beings, kangsa, to elucidate it. It needs people who are living it, who are believing it, and they believe it from living it. You see, you can't know the Dharma scholastically, or you're good in your memory, and you can repeat, and you can quote, and you can say names, and dates, and places, and you know the stuff, but you're not living it. If you are just quoting and you have a good memory and you know the Dharma very well and you're just quoting it, you can bring people to the Dharma, but it will also attract likewise type of people who are just interested in it, intellectual sake, maybe a little bit more. But to actually, as Kepchis Sorumchi, he said, to actually moisten a person's mind and practice, to moisten the ground in which you plant the seeds of Dharma, you have to practice. And I remember during Lama Tsongkhapa's initiation, Kepchis Sorumchi in Los Angeles at Thubten Dajiling told us very clearly. I remember even to this day, like it was just this morning, that he says, if we practice the Dharma, if we ourselves commit to the Dharma, if we ourselves really surrender everything, excuses, justifications, anything and everything that can be disturbing to others, if we surrender and we adopt the Dharma, then Kepchis Sorumchi says, then when we speak or teach the Dharma to others, it will really, really move them. It will not be from mouth to ear to brain. It will be from mouth to ear to brain to the heart. So therefore, it is very important for all of us to really accept the Dharma. On what basis? Some people might say, well, I don't know a lot. Correct. But there are people around you who do know a lot. Well, those people make these mistakes and they act like that, they talk like that, they do act like that, they do talk like that, they do make mistakes, and they are strange at times, but they're much better than other people. Much, much better. So therefore, to make the Dharma experience alive in another person's mind and to change their lives, change their destinies, change their outlook and their goals and aspirations, you yourself finally must 100% accept the Dharma. Look, what's the worst that can happen if you accept? What's the worst? Even if it hypothetically there's no bardo and no next life and no karma, we still have to have a good job or a good purpose or something good to do in this life. Whether it's writing books, whether it's helping the poor, whether it is being a singer, whether it's being a businessman, whether it's being a good housewife, a good businesswoman, it doesn't matter. You see, because if you give yourself up to whatever you're doing in this life, at least this life, you will have some sort of results, satisfaction. But if you don't do it all the way and you do it halfway and you do it part way, then the result will always be part way. So therefore, to really look around you and look at the past and look at examples, look at the mahasiddhas, look at the stories of high lamas, look at our teachers, look at the monasteries, Look at the people around you who've committed. I mean, everybody around us can be a hero who have committed to the Dharma. Because, you know, in this day and age, to commit to the Dharma means to commit to others, which means to commit to yourself less in a negative way. Those are heroes. So instead of looking for perfect heroes where people have to be perfect, we look for people who are doing their best. And when we look for people who are doing their best, that would be good enough. Because, you know, if we're going to be a judge and say that person has to be like that for perfect for them to be my hero or my object of inspiration, then we have to look at ourselves. What have we achieved besides, if not even in the Dharma, what have we achieved? So therefore, what's important is that we ourselves have to accept the Dharma. Practice the Dharma. And I'm not talking about empty words. All the way. And how do we start? The same thing I've been griping on and talking about for 15, 20 years now. What is your worst quality? Eliminate it. Every birthday, one of your negative qualities, eliminate it. I have a lot of negative qualities. I've eliminated some. Proof that I Temrimji, has eliminated some of my negative qualities. Proof. Kichara House has grown tremendously. If I didn't eliminate some of my negative qualities, a lot of people wouldn't come to Kichara House and join and do, because I'll be a monster. Why join a monster? So prove that I've eliminated some of my negative, scary qualities. Is that Kichara House grown? And if I eliminate more of my scary monster qualities that I have because I'm in samsara, then Kichara House will grow even bigger. That applies to me. That applies to everyone. And if you yourself start eliminating some of the qualities that are not beneficial, then your own world will start to grow. Your work will grow. Your friendship will grow. The respect for you will grow. Your respect for yourself will grow. And you know, ultimately we need respect for ourselves. Before we can expect respect from other people, we need to respect ourselves. And do you know how respect for ourselves come? Respect for ourselves come when we deep in our heart know we've worked hard to eliminate this quality and we are free of it. Actually, to be free of negative qualities is really to be free. To hide behind negative qualities, to keep negative qualities, to defend, to protect, to justify negative qualities, you will never be free. You may hide it from other people who don't know what you're hiding, and you think that's freedom, but it's not freedom. Freedom is not hiding or avoiding what you know you should be doing and you're not. Freedom is knowing that you have these bad qualities, you have these good qualities, and the bad qualities are eliminated at a very fast speed because you don't have much time left. And then when you know that you've worked hard to eliminate that certain bad quality that will not benefit yourself and others. Bad qualities are qualities that don't benefit yourself and others, that don't get you far. Then you will have self-confidence. Then you will grow. Then you will talk more, better. Your head will stand up straight. Learning and doing things will be easier and easier. Why? Because you earned it. Hiding, avoiding, justifying. Hiding our bad qualities. Justifying so that we don't look bad our bad qualities. And covering our bad qualities will bring us a little bit of benefit short term. Long term, no. Do you know why? Because other people will destroy their bad qualities and move ahead. And when you look at them, they started with you 5 years ago, they moved this far, you're still here. And then 6 years later, they're here, you're here. Then 7 years later, they're here, you're here. And then the gap between you and them become farther. And when it becomes farther, you have to hide more, cover more, explain more. Maybe you might even leave or run away or don't want to talk anymore. Because why? The gap is too far. Most people who leave, most people who run away, not everybody, are people who don't like that gap. And the gap is too glaring. The gap is too obvious. Gap means the difference between you and your progress and other people's progress. So when the gap becomes very big, you think, I should leave. I should go. I must go away. I can't do this anymore. Why? Because you yourself are not looking at what you should do, but you're looking at the gap. That gap feeds insecurity. That gap, that space feeds anger. That gap feeds negative thoughts. That gap feeds everything in us that makes us unhappy. We don't want to go in that direction. So what we need to do is, whatever has happened to us is our karma. If you really believe that, and you should now, you will let go of anger very quick. Look, if you found out your car has been stolen because the gate was open, and you're angry, and you want to know why and who, and then when you think back and someone says, hey, you left the gate open, you go, oh. Then your anger at other people goes away because you left the gate open. Similarly, in that same example, if you want to lessen your anger, your insecurity, and your fears, then you got to let go of the qualities in you that hurt yourself and others. And as long as you keep that, along with that good friend of yours, which is insecurity, anger, bitterness, falling behind, fear, those are your good friends for a long time, but they're not real friends. They are fair weather friends. They are friends that only when things are good, they look good. They're not real friends. So therefore, if we want to really progress in benefiting others, and we're here, you know, we're here. Some of us are getting stipends, we're working in departments, you know, we've given up careers or whatever outside, and we're doing things inside. You're here. Why don't you just go all the way? Why don't you just go all the way? If you're here for 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, 30 years, until my next incarnation, whatever amount of time you're here, wherever you are, wherever here is for you, Dharma or not, go all the way. Why do things halfway? Because whatever you do all the way, you take it with you. All the way. So therefore, pujas means to clear. Learning rituals. Learning secret tantric hand gestures called mudras. Using tantric instruments, vajras and bells, is only a very small part of the puja. Mastering hand mudras, mastering the offerings, mastering the tormas, reading the text, ringing the bell at the right place is only 5% of the pujas, in my guesstimation. It's important. 95% in the puja is what? Intent. There are lamas in Ganden who are very high. Chia, who's been with me for so long, has met, like example, Ganima Rinpoche, who is, according to very many people, is a bodhisattva, who has stayed in Yamataka meditation most of his life and achieved oneness with Yamataka. And one day, I went to his house and he lived right behind me in Ganden. A few of my students had the fortune to meet this bodhisattva who has passed away, and he said, no incarnation. He said, don't look for me, no incarnation. He told clearly to people. Okay, now, when I went to meet him, in his kamsin, I forgot what kamsin he belongs to. Go kamsin. In his kamsin in Ganden, they were having a Tara puja. Tara puja, all of you know how to do Tara. And the whole kamsin was there, and they invited Genima to come, and they set up a throne and stuff for him. And Genima wasn't there, and in his ladrang, there was very few students, not like the normal 5-6 people. There was maybe one person there watching him, taking care of him. So I go over to Genima's place almost every day to visit. I bring vegetables and I bring fruits. I bring a lot of offerings because I know he's Yamantaka. So if I make offerings to him every day, it's better than offering to a statue. So I used to go all the time. And he liked me very much. When he see me, he'd smile and he'd go like that to me. He'd say, sit here. So I sit on the floor right below his feet almost every day, listening to him, talking to him, and having conversations. And he liked me because I joked and I played. And he loves jokes. He loves jokes. And he's a little smitchy. In his own little holy way. You know, he has little smitchy jokes. Bitchy. Okay, but it doesn't hurt anyone. It's very funny. He'll say things, he'll stop and he'll make you think. He'll go, that was kind of bitchy and funny. But he never accuses anybody. No, no, he's a real monk. That one, don't get me wrong. And one day we were sitting there and I said, hey, where's all your students? And Gen Nima said, they all went for puja, Tara puja. And I said, how come the Gigu lets you stay home and you don't have to go when everybody has to go? And he laughed, because how dare the Gigu tell him you have to go to puja or you're out? Because if you don't attend pujas, you get a mark. If you get enough marks, you have to go see the disciplinarian to explain why you break the discipline. So I joke with him. I mean, he's like 67 years old. He's an elite lama. He's high. And of course, he's accepted for pujas. You know what I mean? So I joke with him. I said, how come you don't have to go? And he said to me, how come you don't have to go? I said, because I'm a Rinpoche. He went like this. He says, what does that mean? I said, how come you don't have to go? And that's how we joke. Of course, I did it with deep respect. And he said, because I don't know how to do pujas. I said, oh, please. I went like this and nicely. I said, oh, please, Genla. I said, of course you know how to do pujas. He said, no, I don't. And I went like, it caught me off guard. One of the highest, most elite lamas of Ganden doesn't know how to do a Tara puja. I said, what pujas do you know? He says, I don't know any pujas. Well, even you guys know how to do Tara pujas. Even Gimli Rinpoche knows how to do Tara pujas. Please. He says, I don't know how to do any pujas. I said, oh. I said, why not? He says, I'm not interested in them. I said, why not? He says, I came to the monastery not to learn pujas. I came to the monastery to learn emptiness and to go meditate so I can become a Buddha. I'm not here to do pujas for villagers, because if I become a Buddha, I can benefit the villagers much more than a puja. And I was like, well, that shut me up for a week. So I said, what pujas do you do? He says, none. I said, what happens when you have obstacles? He says, when I have obstacles, I meditate on Yamataka. I said, oh. I said, what happens when people want to throw black magic at you? He says, I meditate on Yamataka. I said, what happens when people come and they have problems and they ask you to clear the problems? He says, I meditate on Yamataka. I said, then why doesn't everybody meditate on Yamataka? He said, exactly. And I was like, And so I said, well, when people have sometimes they get dip, you know, sometimes they get some spiritual energy to come into them to make them have fits. I said, what do you do? Because there's a puja for that. There's a special mantra that you eat. It's a mantra written, blessed, and you eat it. It's called Sa, a deity Sa that affects you. You eat this mantra. When you eat this mantra, you stop having fits. I've seen it. It's very powerful. I said, well, how? He says, oh no. He says, you know, on Yamataka? I said, yeah. He's got 34 arms. One of the arms is holding up a... I don't know what to call this in English. One of Yamataka's hands is holding this. I said, okay. And he said, I said, so? He says, this represents he can clear away obstacles from people, purify their body from interferences. So when Yamataka holds this one, it represents he can clear obstacles of that nature. So if you meditate, if you're an accomplished Yamataka practitioner and you bless the person with the mantra, they will be free from interferences without any pujas or eating mantras. And I was like, well, because if I have to clear the obstacles, thank you. If I have to clear the obstacles, I have to do a lot of pujas, you know, because I'm not Yamataka. Anyways, that's what he said. And you know, the way he said it wasn't like, oh, I'm Yamataka and I just do that and they're fine. No, it was just very humble, very straightforward, just said it point blank. And I was like, not 1 ounce of ego or showing off. And I'm very sharp. None. And he said to me, "What that every single item that Yamataka holds in his hands represent a power you can accomplish through his meditation. In Vajrayogini Sutra, the 34 arms of Yamataka, this side 18, this side 18, this 18 is combined into Vajrayogini's right hand, this 18 is combined into Vajrayogini's left hand. So Vajrayogini's two hands represents those 34, same. And I was like, oh, he didn't say that, but I concluded that. So I said, oh. And then he said, you know, Yamataka's one of his hands is like that, pointing down, holding nothing, but the mudra is like that, pointing down. I said, yes. He says, well, if you do Yamataka's meditation and you do the mantra and blow on the person, then any spirits who want to enter them or harm them, this mudra and Yamataka avoids them from entering, because this is a threatening mudra. Don't disturb my students. So I said, what do you do? He says, well, I meditate on Yamataka and then I blow the mantra on them and they'll be fine. I said, no pujas. He said, no. I saw this with my own eyes. Now, so I said, you don't go to any pujas. He says, no. You don't know any pujas. He says, no. He says, actually, I don't have any need for pujas. And I know what he meant, because the way he said it, it means he's accomplished Yamataka. For Yamataka, I can clear everyone. Not necessary. So I said, when you do divinations, what do? He says, I meditate on Yamataka. I was like, oh. Don't you have to do black tea before your divinations? Offer some incense, you know, purify the room? He says, no. He says, the room is always purified because of Yamataka. And I realized that if you focus on your yidam in that strong way, it's the same for any yidam. If your yidam is Tara, if your yidam is Yamataka, Vajrabini, Hiruka, Kuya Samaja, Kala Chakra, it's all the same. And that's how he accomplished it. So I said, Genima, seriously, you don't know any pujas, not even Tara. Because Tara is like really easy. I even learned that in America. He's like, no. And I was so inspired. I was just so inspired that when you accomplish your yidam, means you and your yidam have become one, and you become very powerful in your meditation. You don't need any pujas. And sometimes when the rains don't come on time in the monasteries, the villagers, even the Indian villagers, will come to the monastery office and ask them to do puja. So the monastery has set 10 to 15 monks aside to do rain pujas. Within a day, you'll see the rains come, especially directed to Nagas. But when Genima was in the monastery, when the villagers come to the monastery come to Genima. And Genima goes outside and he blows into the air. And I asked him, what mantra do you blow into the air? He says, Yamataka. And I went, oh. I said, which one? And he told me. Because the Yamataka has four mantras. So I said, oh. I said, all you do is blow Yamataka's mantra in the air? He says, yes. And then it rains. And I've seen it. I've seen him not once or twice, a few times, get assisted out and stand outside of his house on his veranda, blow mantra in the air. Literally look at the air and blow it. And then within 15 to 20 minutes, it will start raining. I've seen it with my own eyes because I live right behind him. His house is literally from here to the corner of that altar, twice that distance. That's it. I see it clearly in the light of day. I mean, he doesn't do it in the night in a tent. And there are times when some seasons, the rains are very heavy and then the crops will die. So the villagers come, they go to the office of the monastery. The office of the monastery representative will come with katas and offerings, maybe two monks, I see, and they go and ask Genima. Then Genima will go outside, he'll blow into the air in the rain. It's raining. Within 30 minutes, the rain will completely stop. And I mean for days. I've seen this with my own eyes. That's why when I talk about Vajrayogini or Yamataka or anything, I know those tantras work. But you see, for those to work, you have to prepare your groundwork now. You have to be honest, do your work hard, don't be sneaky. You need to let go of your ego. You need to do all that now. So when you do Vajrayogini, you have the results very fast. You don't get rid of them when you get Vajrayogini. Because by the time you get Vajrayogini, you won't be able to get rid of them at all because it's built up so strong already. Now get rid of it now. Surrender now. Surrender your ego. Go all the way. Now, for ordinary people like you and me, pujas are very effective because pujas come from either Buddha himself or one of his great disciples, like one of the great pandits like Nagarjuna, Chandrakomi, Damarkitti, one of these great masters, or someone like Adisha, who made the wealth phase pujas. The wealth phases in Tibet were, they didn't exist in India. Adisha made those. Because in Tibet, getting things for Dharma was very difficult. Supplies, needs, sponsors, you know, materials, because Tibet was quite barren compared to lush India. So Adisha, when he came to Tibet, when he was building monasteries, it was very difficult to get people and sponsors and what they needed to build. So he invoked Tara's blessings, and he created wealth vases. And what it contains inside, the mantras, the prayers, so if you could have that wealth vase, it will bless the environment to attract, like a magnet, the things you need to make the Dharma grow. That was originally started by Atisha. So a lot of pujas were created by highly enlightened master. Example, even Pabongkaramji came along with very powerful pujas. The Yamataka sadhana is written by Pabongka current. There were sadhanas in Yamataka before, but Pabongka condensed it and made it even more effective for today. So there are many pujas written. And some of the pujas are by the lamas are from their own understanding of current pujas, and they combine it and make it better. Some pujas are from visions. Some high lamas actually have visions, clear, authentic visions, in which certain beings will teach them, and they will write down the pujas and they'll compile, and it's very effective. Certain pujas were planted in the environment or in the minds or the area of the person. So when the time is right, that puja will appear. Example, let's say in Cha's life, 10 lifetimes ago, one Rinpoche planted a puja in his mind stream. Then he said in 2011, when you have this disaster, this problem, that puja will come to light. So let's say that we have a disaster, a problem, and then puja, and then Cha's here, he'll remember the puja. Maybe he make a prostration, he'll remember. Maybe he do his guru's mantra, he'll remember. Maybe he does a puja, he'll remember. And go, oh, then he'll write that down immediately. And that becomes a mind puja, something that was planted lifetimes ago. That can happen also. Rare for us, but not rare. Anything's possible. So pujas are effective mostly by intent. If your intent to do a puja is to show off, get money, get respect, then the pujas will be effective, but not totally effective. If your motivation for doing the pujas is truly, as much as you can, to benefit the recipient, that means, let's say Gimli asks you to do a puja for her health, and you do it with the intention that, yes, I will do medicine puja, and I want Gimli to get well, and I want her to have her obstacles removed, and I want her karma purified so she can do dharma, so she can become an enlightened being to benefit others. For this reason, I will do the beautiful and powerful medicine puja. And when you do the medicine puja puja for Gimli with that motivation, not only her obstacles, your obstacles for health will be clear too. Okay, you can do pujas for individuals, yourself. You can do pujas for an institution like Kichara. You can do pujas for a business, an organization. You can do pujas for a group. You can do pujas for a country. You can do pujas for a purpose. You can do pujas for a particular aspiration. You can do pujas before traveling. You can do pujas for safety, for protection. You can do pujas for attainments. Example, Tsok pujas are for attainments. When we do the Lama Chöpa, composed by the great Panchen Rinpoche, when we do the Lama Chöpa Tsok puja, La Tsok, it is for attainments. What is a Lama Chöpa Tsok puja? It is to support us in gaining a great amount of merits. So whatever tantric practice we're doing, gain results. So let's say we're doing Yamataka, let's say we're doing Manjushri, let's say we're doing Black Manjushri, let's say we're doing Tara, we're doing Vajrayini, we're doing Yamataka. You see, for those tantras to get results, you need a lot of merit. So every 2 weeks, you do a Tsok puja. In the Tsok puja, everything is multiplied. If you have 10 things there, it's multiplied to a million, an example. So when you offer up a million items, you gain a merit of a million, so that you go back to meditate after the puja, you gain accomplishments. So therefore, in between Tsok, you should do your sadhanas very well. You must do your sadhanas very well. So when you do your sadhanas very well, and you don't miss Tsok, and you do your Tsok well, it collects a tremendous amount of merit for you to gain enlightenment. So Tsok pujas for many have many purposes, but primarily to gain merits for your tantric practice to bear fruit and result. For your tantric practice to bear fruits and result, you must have very strong guru devotion, guru samaya, and to hold on to your words and honor and vows, samayas of commitment. So whatever vows you've taken during the tantra is very important. So you hold your vows very strongly, you have very strong guru devotion, and you do your sadhana and practice. That one, combined with tsok, will gain attainments. Put it in a nutshell. It's all connected. So therefore, when we do pujas in Kichara, I don't want our people to be lopsided, half past six, or just simply make up something and do. We have to have a true lineage. We have to have a true source. So we're very fortunate that my friend Gen Losang took time from his studies and his examinations to come and teach us. And he's learning from an authentic source. And he is from my monastery, ours. So we know the source as well. How do we know? Because he's not doing the pujas on his own in his room. He's doing it in a monastery with thousands of other monks. So whatever he's doing here is what the monks are doing every single day in Ganden. Think about it. What you guys are doing here is exactly what the monks are doing in Ganden. How do we know that he's correct? Because he's doing it with thousands of other monks every day for the last 10, 15, 20 years. He can do it with his eyes closed. And he studied the puja since he was very young. Unlike me, when I was very young, I was in a disco dancing to Madonna in America. So I don't know a lot of pujas, but it's all right. I aspire to be a gain nima. Why I'm aspiring to be a gain nima is could be because I'm lazy or could be I have good intention. I'll leave that to you guys to think. Now, so whatever he's teaching you here, I want you guys to remember Kichara House and all my friends. It is exactly what thousands of monks are doing in Ganden. How you pick up your vajra and bell, how you ring your damaru, how you throw your rice, how you use your bumba, your vase, is exactly how the holy monks and the high lamas such as Trijang Rinpoche, Song Rinpoche, Ganden Tipa, Shapa Churchi, Jangse Churchi, Kensu Jamba Yeshi Rinpoche, Kensu Kunchu Tseni Rinpoche, all Kamche Leti Rinpoche, all these high lamas, for their whole lives they benefit others with pujas, right? It's exactly what you're learning here. Think about that. So whatever Leti Rinpoche was doing during his life, pujas for other people, whatever Kamche Sorum Rinpoche was doing, whatever Trijang Rinpoche was doing, is exactly what you're doing here. You think about that. So when Trijang Rinpoche was doing this, that's what Genla's teaching you, that's what you're doing. When Trijang Rinpoche was doing this with his vajra and bell, that's what Genla's doing here, that's what you're learning from him. So exactly the way Trijang Rinpoche is moving, you're moving. I want you guys to have the impact of that in your mind. How fortunate you are. And I want you to ask yourselves, what merit did you collect in your previous lives to sit in front of a Ganden Sangha to learn authentic pujas to benefit others? What merit did you collect? I want you to think about that for a minute. What did you do? Remember, I always say cause resemble results. Results resemble cause. So you must have done something in your previous lives to collect the merit to be right here. Look at you guys. What were you guys doing before the Dharma? Nothing wonderful, nothing bad. I mean, you're just hanging around like a mosquito. What do mosquitoes do? They eat, they sleep, they mate. That's what you guys are doing. You eat, you sleep, and mate. I mean, you know, you're not bad, but you're pretty much like a mosquito or any other sentient beings on this planet. Just eat and sleep and die and mate. So what did you do to be here in a beautiful altar with 108 Lama Tsongkhapas, or 200, whatever, I've lost count, in front of Tsongkhapa, with Dharma friends, with the air in a pleasant aspect, with a real monk from Ganden, learning real pujas stemming from Trijang Rinpoche and Pabongka Rinpoche. What did you do? Are you going to throw this opportunity away by leaving this room and then going back to your old poor me justifications and insecurities? Or you can go all the way. And for the pujas to be really effective, during the pujas you're reciting holy prayers and mantras and supplications and aspirations and words and meditations. So when you leave this room, are you going to use the same mouth to be mean to people? To use your mouth to hurt people? Because if you are, it's like putting honey and milk and curd inside your mouth and then putting dirt and feces and pee in your mouth and mixing it in your mouth and swallow that. Same. What did you do to be able to be in this room to learn these pujas that His Holiness Kyabje Trijang Dorje Chang, Kyabje Song Rinpoche, Kyabje Lati Rinpoche, Kensu Jangpa Yeshe? What did you do to sit here and learn these directly? And you know, you don't have to go to Ganden, you don't have to spend any money, you don't have to come out with anything. Someone sponsored their ticket, someone sponsored this place, someone sponsored the aircon. You didn't have to pay anything to learn. You know, monks like them spend 10, 15, 20 years in a monastery with their hair cut to learn all these things. You don't even have to become monks. How come you're so fortunate and lucky? I rejoice for all of you from my heart. I rejoice how fortunate you are to be in Kachara, to learn sacred pujas, sacred rites, sacred prayers, passed down by the masters of the past, who we know are living Mahasiddhas. And did you spend your whole life like Genla, studying, meditating, retreating, holding vows, being clean, being a monk? Did you spend your whole life doing that? Or did you spend your whole life having a good time, enjoying yourself, doing drugs, alcohol, whatever? And then you're here, at the same level, on the same room, learning from a monk. What did you do to deserve this? Obviously something. I want you guys to think about that. How fortunate you are that when it's puja practice, run here and have the best motivation. Be alert, be very respectful. And if I may recommend to all of you, at the end of pujas, when you finish learning, all of you from your own pocket should put a beautiful angpao and offer it to Genla. Am I telling you to offer angpao? Yes, I am. He's a monk. Don't offer him silly things, a little bell, a little clock, all these things he cannot carry. Offer him an angpao to collect merit. You're very fortunate. What's an angpao? It's an expression of our appreciation. How much what something was worth to you. Now, when you learn these pujas, make sure you're dressed appropriately as usual, because you're in presence of monk. You guys are dressed fine. Act appropriately, sit appropriately, don't point your feet at the monks. Don't talk loud in front of the monks. Don't start pushing and joking and playing with the monks. They are monks. This is a real monk, not a business monk, a real one. Why should you do that? Because he's way above you? In one sense, yes, because he's very disciplined. In another way, it's to show respect for the Dharma, Sangha, the third jewel. Learn the pujas very well. Study it and practice it. And when you have the good fortune and luck to perform the pujas for others who ask you for your help, listen to this. By doing the pujas, you help yourself. By doing the pujas, you help the person requesting you. By doing the pujas, you collect a great amount of merit for you to attain enlightenment and before that, attainments. By doing the pujas well, you also can help in getting donations to sustain our beautiful center. Most of you don't have money to give to the center, and I'm talking for everybody around the world. Most of us don't have a lot of money to give to the center, but if we did, we would definitely donate. I'm sure you guys would definitely help, but you see, if you don't have the money, you have the skill, well, that can draw the donations. So by doing these pujas well, it will draw donations to give to the center, to sustain the center. Are we doing pujas for money? No. But that's a byproduct, so we might as well face the facts. It is a byproduct, so you can help Kichara that way. And never just play after pujas, never go out and just play and just pretend and just tell people and show off. Always be humble about pujas you know. Don't show off. Don't just do part of it here and there and play games and show people and talk like that. Don't bring down pujas to a low level, because there will be less effect for you. Talk about it. Facebook it. Tweet it. Blog it. Explain and share how fortunate you are. Not one, not twice. Since you enter Kichara, and for everybody in Dharma centers, your life has completely changed for the better. Today you're getting real knowledge. You're getting secret knowledge. Do you know that people in the past, very people in the past who have people in the past, in the early 30s and 40s and 50s, would travel very far to go to Tibet in disguise to learn the secrets of Tibetan pujas and tantras, because they are effective. And now we brought Shangri-La here, we brought Tibet here. Think about it. We don't have the fortune right now to have a few sangha staying in Kichara constantly or consistently, not yet, but we can do halfway. We can learn the pujas ourselves. Be humble when you do the pujas. Learn the pujas well, perfectly. And if you miss something in the pujas, do it over. Make sure that whatever people have, Rewa, whatever people ask you to do for their health or their business, whatever, make sure it's genuine. And when you make the offerings as beautiful, as extensive, as rich and beautiful. Rich means what? Extensive as possible. Rich doesn't mean you need silver bowls. If you can put silver bowls, put silver. Rich can mean if you're using paper cups, use a bigger paper cups. Never be stingy on pujas, because they're all for the Buddhas. Pujas that have been offered to the three jewels, Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, you may eat a little afterwards, or as a blessing. Pujas that's been offered to the local gods, or Nagas, you don't eat. It's very important to remember. And before puja, make sure the offerings are pure and wonderful. Even preparing tormas, you should be enthusiastic to learn and come and do it. You know why? Because the tormas are being offered to the three jewels. According to Sarnamchi, the ingredients of the tormas correlate with certain attainments accomplished in Tantra. The ingredients of the torma, along with the color and the shape. Ingredients, color, and shape of the tormas correlate directly to certain attainments achieved in Tantra. So those attainments achieved in Tantra, manifested in symbolic form, is the tormas. So when you're offering the tormas up to the Buddhas, you are offering back the symbolism of the attainments you wish to gain. So therefore, bodhicitta can manifest as a moon disc on a torma or a white torma. Purification of negative karma can manifest as a red color on a torma. Meditation on the winds and channels to move your chi so you can gain control of your mind, so you can gain control of your depth, can be manifest on the white butter that is the line that is put on the edge of a torma, on certain tormas. So therefore, the attainments you gain in Tantra correlates with the shape, color, and ingredients of the torma. So even making the torma, your mouth is covered, your hands is clean, and you do it well, and you do it perfectly. You don't do it with a slouchy, bored, let's get this real quickly done attitude, because even making tormas is part of the Dharma practice. That's how extensive it is. So Khyabdzi Sarangji says offering tormas is one of the root ways to gain attainments. That's how powerful it is. So therefore, the offering should be extensive. Your table's big, your offering should be big and full also. Whatever you are taught as the primary offering, see, these are the primary offerings. You can replicate and duplicate it. That means you can do 20, 30, 40 butter lamps and stuff. Your tormas can be bigger. In the monastery, I was very well known and famous for that. When I ask pujas, the tormas this big, I usually sponsor them to make tormas this big, that big. They'll be, we know, you want the tormas big. Yeah, the monks will always say that, we know. Because every time I call the monks to my room, I always call the monks to my room and say, okay, I want this puja done, I want this puja, because I'm sponsoring. And then they say, oh, how many tormas? They'll say, this many. I say, oh, make it triple. They go, but this is enough. I said, not for me. They go, okay. So whenever we do tormas in the monastery, I require the tormas. Like, this torma is unacceptable to me. But it's fine. It's fine, because by Tantra, you bless it to become very big. But for me, my meditation is not so big, so good, so I just have big tormas. It saves me the work. So I always make huge tormas, big ones, a lot of ingredients. And sometimes I put the ingredients in the monastery, that'll be enough. I said, no, put it, just dump it in there. Always. I mean, if you're going to invite Tara, you're going to invite Buddha or Vajrayana over to have your torma, it's a party. It's a little dinner party. You don't want Vajrayana and her 32 dakinis and Hiruka and Yamata all come and say, that's it. Like who gets to eat first? So I like to have a lot, because I always have dinner parties for Buddhas. And my dinner parties always have a lot of offerings. It sounds like that, but that's my imagination. I want it to be planned. And then the place where you have the tormas, the room should be very clean. The room should be very clean. You know why? When you're inviting special guests over, aren't you going to clean your house and make sure it's clean? Otherwise they say, ooh, dirty butt. You lose face. You should make sure the place is clean. You should make sure whatever you put out is perfect. You should make sure everything is bountiful, full, because you're inviting very special guest to come. That's how I do it. Okay, so I want you guys to feel very fortunate that you are learning pujas here from a real source, a genuine source. One. Two, you are learning pujas as another expression of your compassion. You're learning pujas as another expression of your compassionate activity, because this activity can benefit somebody in the future. So it's an expression of your compassion. What else could it be? Thirdly, all of the conditions for you to learn are here. How fortunate are you? The monk is here, everything is paid for, there's rooms, there's knowledge, everything's comfortable. Everything is brought to you. You don't have to go to Tibet. How fortunate you are. So your job, good motivation, pay attention, learn it well. That's your job. So in Kichar House, we are very different than many other centers, with deep respect to other centers, with deep respect. We are very different than other centers because we have so many activities, we have so much to learn, and what we're learning is authentic. It's authentic. You think about all that. In the near future, in Kichar House, I will institute 1 to 4 persons to do Tara Puja every single day, dedicated to our organization. So let's say that in Kichar House, we're going to be doing Setra Pujas every single day. So whatever is necessary for Setra Puja, Kichar House will sponsor, because the benefit will go to the whole organization. So in the future, I'm going to institute Tara Pujas to be done at Kichar House every single day. Do you know why? Tara has a very, according to Sarangji, Tara has a very special energy, that she's very quick to help success in Dharma work. So any Dharma work we want to accomplish, the monks in Ganden, Sera, Drepung, Tashi Lompo, all these great institutions, Gyudur Gyume, will invoke upon the gentle lady goddess, Tara. So for things to accomplish quickly and faster, especially Dharma work, Tara is the Yidam. Tara is the Yidam. She removes obstacles for growth of Tara. So I would like very much for Kichara House to do Tara Puja. And a normal Tara Puja, minimal, is 4 people. Correct? I would like to have Tara Puja done every day. And another puja I would like to do every single day, eventually, is Dukkha. Why? Dukkha is powerful for removing obstacles that are beyond our control and protecting beyond our control. So I would like very much Dukkha Pujas and Tara Pujas and Setra to be done every single day from Kichara House for Kichara House and all members that come. It will make the place even more powerful and blessed. Doesn't sound very exciting, because we do that in the monasteries. We do Tara Pujas almost every day. Before we debate, you have to do Tara Puja every single day and a Torma to set up every day. Every day it's done. Hence the monasteries grow. Imagine, let's say that Gimli does Tara every single day for all the Kichara House. She's our representative, she represents all of us, she's invoking Tara to bless all of Kichara House. Very, very powerful. So therefore, I was very excited that all of you are doing this. I'm very, very happy, and I rejoice from my heart all of you are doing this. And I want you guys to please master it without any deficiency. Be precise. Do you know why it's precise? Because somebody's life might depend on these pujas in the future. How much more worth is a person's life? It's beyond price. You can lose anything but your life. Some people's safety and protection and care and accomplishment and some people's aspirations, if you do these pujas, will change and make it better for them. Change their destiny, make it better for them. That's a beautiful responsibility. It's not a heavy responsibility, it's a beautiful responsibility. So learn these pujas without any deficiency, meaning no mistakes. And learn it well, because it's another expression of your compassion. And this is what we do in traditional pujas available. These pujas are not usually done by lay people, probably never, okay, in Ganden at least. So you guys are able to do this. You're very fortunate. All right? So I want you guys to make sure that Gelo-san is always comfortable. Make offerings to him. Make sure he eats well. Make sure he's comfortable. Make sure you show yourself in such a way he'd want to come back. Of course, he won't be affected by your how you are because he operates from himself. But it's nice to create the causes for a monk to come back, isn't it? All right? And he is not like me. He's very traditional. You know, he doesn't joke much. He's very serious. He's very untemperamental. That might be good. That might be better. I don't know. We all have our own styles. I just have to be me. And as I usually say, if you don't like me, maybe it's not my problem. Okay, whatever. Now, before you start your pujas, training, have a good motivation. May I learn this to invoke upon a certain deity to remove the obstacles and problems of others so they may gain attainment, happiness, and fulfillment. And after you finish your pujas, you should do the same motivation. And you should learn the pujas very well, have a good attitude, and be very karsiwata, cohesive with each other. If you're in the back fighting, being bitchy to each other, you come, you sit here, do holy puja, doesn't match. Like I said, why put curd or yogurt in your mouth that's sweet and then put poison on the other side and then mix it? Doesn't make sense. And if there's someone who is not nice and not kind, just let them be. Just leave it. Their karma comes back to them what to do. Okay? So that's very, very important. Any questions on what I spoke about? I've answered this hundreds of times. Hundreds and hundreds of times. For example, when you do solicitation to Lama Tsongkhapa, in the Guru Yoga, isn't there a part where you ask Lama Tsongkhapa to remain forever until the end of time, turn the wheel of Dharma 84,000 times? Well, have you met Tsongkhapa yet? Have you seen Tsongkhapa yet? By soliciting Tsongkhapa, it creates the karma for you to meet any qualified Lama to bring you onto the path. Okay, so if you are studying with a Lama and that Lama passes away, the merit that you collect with that Lama will transform or translate into you finding, after your Guru's passed, another one exactly the same that will give you and continue in the future life. The merit and the connection and the affinity never ends, because the purpose of you holding on to that Lama is not to meet him in every life. Actually, the real purpose is to become a fully enlightened being, then he's in your heart all the time. You understand? So therefore, if your Lama has passed away and there's no incarnation, you think, well, how do I continue? Well, Shakyamuni passed away, how do we continue? Tsongkhapa passed away, how do we continue? Do you understand the logic behind that? That's how we continue. Okay, relate that to everything. So whether your Lama's incarnation comes back or not, it doesn't make any difference on an ultimate sense. Be nice to have our Lama back. But you see, the whole purpose of having our Lama back is not to have our husband back or our lover back. The whole purpose is to continue on practicing the Dharma. So let's say that I didn't get to meet Sarangji immediately. I didn't get to meet Pabongka Rinpoche immediately, but I met Pabongka Rinpoche's elite student, Geshe Losan Darchen, who was the same as Pabongka Rinpoche. It was like studying with Pabongka Rinpoche. But when I saw Khyentse Losan Tachi's picture the first time, I just thought, what a great Lama, and that was it. But when I saw Pabongka Rinpoche's picture, I cried, I freaked out, my hair stood up, I just went, oh. But I never got to meet the actual Pabongka, Dechen Ningbo. But when I met a student, I received the teachings, Vajugini, the practices, my vows, my refuge from Pabongka's direct student. And during the teachings, he would quote Pabongka all the time. Do you understand my point? So what's the difference? When you do your prayers with Lama Tsongkhapa every day, isn't there a part where you solicit him to remain until time's end, to turn the wheel of Dharma 84,000 Dharmas? Don't you say that in the Ganden Hajjama, Guru Yoga? Well, you've been saying that every day. Either Tsongkhapa is dead, which he is, and he has no blessings, which is not true, or it creates the karma for you to get the teachings one way or another. Does everybody understand that? Let's remember that forever. Okay, questions?
Ramji, eventually I'd like to work to translate all these images to English. Is the effect like less if we don't do it in the original language?
Oh, no.
We can't learn English as well.
If that's the case, then we should all do it in Sanskrit.
Okay.
Alright, a lot of the pujas in Sanskrit. I mean, Adisha, when he composed the prayers, he didn't compose it in Tibetan, he composed it in his language, whatever that language was at that time. Okay, so then that means the Thai monks all have to recite in Sanskrit. That means the Japanese monks have to recite in Sanskrit. What about all of China? What about Tsutsi Foundation? All that? They all have to recite in Sanskrit. They're reciting Chinese and Thai, Tibetan, Pali, then it's all ineffective, illogical. So does it have to be in its original language?
No.
But the essence?
I remember, I think Ramji said...
But the mantras would remain.
Yes. I remember Ramji saying that it's more auspicious or something to do it in Tibetan.
No, it's not more auspicious to do it in Tibetan. It flows better. The kind of staccato is there, like Sanje, Chodong, Soji, Chodnam, La. Next time. Janju, Badu, Dadni, Kyabsu, Chi. It's just easier. There's a staccato. There's a formula. Where is it? I take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha for all sentient beings until I become a fully enlightened being. You know, it just sounds better.
Yeah.
All right, that's it.
Okay.
All right, and it's easier, and it's got a rhythm. It's very meditative. Because once you start doing the pujas in English, it's fine. The power is there, but it just sounds a little different. And if you heard some non-Tibetan chants, I take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, and from now until, you're like, oh my God. I mean, it's nice for some people, but if there's a set way, it's kind of nice. It's not wrong, but it's nice. You know what I mean? Okay. So let me ask the question again. The Chinese chant all in Chinese, the Sutra to the Western Paradise. But that originated from India. Don't you think they originally chanted in their own language? So does that mean no Chinese Mahayanist has ever ascended to Amitabha Paradise? Cannot be. So many ascended to Amitabha Paradise by reciting Chinese. And in fact, the Chinese sound very nice. The way they hit the bell and they hit the drum and they go, you know, da 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 ding, and then they prostrate. Actually, when they do it well, it makes me cry. It's very beautiful. It's very, very beautiful. I went to real Mahayana temples in the past and I listened to them chanting to Amitabha. And then when they chant very slowly, like, ah, 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 it was beautiful. It's very beautiful. That's very original. I don't know how to justify that, but it's very beautiful. And Tibetans, and have you seen the Thai monks chant? Oh, wow. When they start chanting and they pass down that cord to bless you, it's like wrap me around twice. I love it. Have you seen the Japanese monks chant? Oh, beautiful. You know why? Because I went to a Buddhist chant forum in America with Geshe-la, where we were in a huge hall and there was Buddhist traditions from all different countries and each one of us had to chant in our own style. So I was there listening to everybody. It was just so beautiful. And which one beautiful? I really couldn't say. And the Vietnamese, oh, so beautiful, ayo. To me, Tibetan's very comfortable, but it was all fine to me. So to answer Paris's question another way, then which one in that room is the real chanter? Which one has the real blessing? The debate can go on for days. Okay, does everybody understand? And the way Chinese, in the Chinese sutras, recite the mantras of Avalokiteshvara, because they do recite it, Namo Avalokiteshvara. They do it their way, and the way Tibetans chant it, they're both actually wrong. They don't sound like the original, but because the intent is there as close as possible, it's fine. Trust me, Avalokiteshvara comes from India, but he's not Indian. He's not Chinese. Kuan Yin is not Chinese. Okay? Kuan Yin is not Tibetan. Kuan Yin is anything that suits your energy and manifestation of compassion. So for Chinese, it's a beautiful lady with a white robe, holding a child, because that's what appeals to Chinese. For Tibetans, it's Ma Kala, fierce, that's Kuan Yin. But the energy is the same. Kuan Yin is not a race, it's not defined. Kuan Yin will appear differently in every planet, in different dimensions, different places, differently. Kuan Yin can be, you know, E.T. go home. I mean, on different planets, Kuan Yin can appear looking like them, green little men. So don't define Kuan Yin's energy and form, just like chanting to only one way. So If we don't chant in its original form, will it have as much blessings? The scholar asks. Yes, it will. So is Tibetan language more superior to chanting than other languages? No, it's not. You do the best you can. Because if I need to send you all to India to study Tibetan and come back, well, see you in my next incarnation. You can see Cha mastering Tibetan. Actually, Cha likes the monastery. If it was a different situation, Cha would be a monk in a monastery hanging out. Probably, I'm sure of it. He'll be pretty good. He'll hold his vows very well. Either by default or on purpose, I don't know. But anyway, he'll hold his vows very well. Any other questions? Good. Feel good about the pujas you're learning? Remember, they have a real source, it's authentic, and it really helps people. I wanted to talk about the seven limbs that's related to the pujas, but I'm not going to talk about it today. You guys take a rest. Good. Let's master these so Kichara House has another service to offer the public that will benefit them. And it benefits us. This is the best education you can get. Right? Good. Dāsō jīne sābī gāwān dī, tāndā dhāvā kundāṁ tāmbāṁ tāṁ, jēpā jēsāṁ lōsāṁ tāpā yī, tāpē hīmbā rīndu sāshī, shō jāngjī sīngjō rīmbō chī, mā jē pāna jī gī jī, jēpā nēpā mēpā yāng, kōnī kundū pēwā shī, tōnī tōmā rīmbō chī, mā jē pāna jī gī jī, jēpā nēpā mēpā yāng, kōnī kundū pēwā shī, gāwān dī nī dī dā, lāmā sāngjī dhū gī nē, dhāvā chī gī mā lō pā dī, sāvā kō pā shī, chū jī jēpā zōng kā pā, chū jī nāpā pēwā lā, kī jī jī mā shē wāng dāng, chī jī mā lō tsā wāng shū, dā dāng jī sīng dī sīng dāng, jē wē zō nī lā dī nī, jē wā lō sāng chā pā yī, dī pā yī rīng bā jī jī, gāng rī rī wē, kō rī wē shī ngā dī, bē dī wē. Chē nī sīng wāng dēng sīng gā tsō yī, shā bē sī dī bā dī tīng jū jī. Very good. Very good.